Assalamu alaikum. Very good morning to all of you, and it's a great honor to be in the good ISIS. And to share some thoughts about the current trend in international relations and within the Islamic world. Good to see old friends. It's energizing to see people who I've worked with over the years and to be back in Kuala Lumpur, a place that has a special place in my heart. I always tell my friends that the only place I requested to be ambassador in was KL. I never received that post. I was instead sent to New York, but I always wanted to serve in KL. But it's good to once in a while visit this place. I have deep respect for Malaysia, for the achievements that Malaysia has made, for the role that Prime Minister Mahathir has played in Malaysia and in the developing in Muslim world. And I believe that is a good example to be followed in terms of serious work, cooperation, and a genuine attempt to bring people together rather than to set them apart. Now, in order to begin our conversation today, I wanted to share with you some ideas about the realities in our global world. I believe there are a number of developing trends in the international arena that we don't pay enough attention to. And because we don't pay enough attention to, people can take advantage of this in order to advance agendas that are not in our interest. If you look seriously at the international situation, you see that the nature of power has changed. The developments over the past one century has in fact moved the center of power from the West to elsewhere. It doesn't mean that the West is going down. It means that it does not control the world anymore. We live in a post-Western world, and we need to accept that we live in a post-Western world. Many of us continue to believe that in spite of the fact that we are in a post-Western world, that the West is still the center of power and influence. The center of power has moved. The constituent elements of power have changed. At time, power was, and I'm sitting next to a former general, so I have to be careful. At times, power meant military power. The more tanks you had, the more missiles you had, the more weapons you had, the more ships you owned, you remember gunboat diplomacy, the greater power you owned. Then you had the economic element added to power. The greater economy you had, the more economic influence you had, the greater power you owned. Then, your cultural influence. the better movies you made, the more impressive Hollywood or Bollywood were, the greater power you had. But then the concept of power transformed. Power was no longer the monopoly of state. Even in the area of security, states no longer monopolized power. Non-state actors became players not just in the political arena, but in the security arena. Non-state actors became important not only in depriving security, international organized crime, international terrorist organization, but in at least claiming to provide security. ISIS tried to use its control over territory to take taxes, to establish police force as a security provider, not as simply a negative force in security. So the state lost the monopoly in owning power, in exercising power, and in using power to deprive security or to provide security. The monopoly of state in international affairs has gone through a major transformation. If you're an international lawyer, I studied international law. I can't call myself an international lawyer, but I studied international law. In all international law classes, only states were considered subjects of international law. No more. Because international law has to conform to the realities in the international system. Now individuals are becoming subjects of international law rather than being objects of international law. Individuals have become capable of changing power relations. In the past, you had to be a media empire in order to have influence over public opinion. Now, somebody with a small mobile device in their hands, using social media, can create a trend globally that will have an impact, a global impact. This is totally a new era. So not only the West has lost its monopoly over global affairs. When I say post-Western world, I mean an era where not only all the important developments takes place in the West, but the West is not the only important player in important global developments. We had an era in the past where the state in the West was the center of everything that was happening. Everything else was in the periphery. Then we had developments around the world where the West had the primary influence. Today, we have neither. The West is not the center of global developments, and not all aspects of global developments have a permanent, dominant Western influence. The West is still an important player. We cannot write off the West, but I think the West and the United States would love it if we consider them omnipotent. They're not omnipotent. But if we consider them omnipotent, then we act as if they're omnipotent. And by default, that's the role they assume. I think that is a cognitive change that we need to make. Unless we make that cognitive change, we perpetuate a situation that is not only not in our interest, but not real. This is not a real situation. Not only is it not in our interest, sometimes we need to make a new reality. But a new reality is emerging, but by not accepting, by having our cognitive orders in the past, by thinking in the past terms, we give the past the possibility of outliving its natural life. And I think that is something that we need to develop in our own minds. And the West also needs to create this cognitive change. We need a cognitive transformation in the world to realize that we as states have lost monopoly and the West has lost monopoly. These two need to go together. If we have this cognitive transformation as the first step, then we need to look at the realities. The realities of the world are as such that no single state or a group of states can survive the challenges and can take advantage of the opportunities without others. We live in a globalized world. But we talk about globalization, but we need to understand what globalization is. Globalization is a condition where you cannot make economic gains at the expense of others. If you go around and tell people that I want to save my environment without saving global environment, people usually laugh at you. They would say, environment is a global commodity. You cannot live in an environmentally sound system where everybody else is using is producing greenhouse gases. That has become, although governments are lagging behind, we still believe that we can control enhance our environment without the rest of the world following suit, particularly some who are now making rather ridiculous claims. In terms of economy, we all understand that globalization requires cooperation. But still, in terms of security, we lag behind. We have not realized that security is also a global commodity. That you cannot live in a secure environment if the rest of the world is insecure. Everybody will accept that you cannot live in an isolation when it comes to environmental security, but we still base our relations, security relations, on the concept of deterrence. What is the concept of deterrence? That you have to make your neighbor insecure in order to have security. We don't understand that the greatest military power on the face of the earth could not even keep its own citizens secure. The United States can destroy the entire world many times over with its nuclear weapons. But I don't know how many of you visited New York after 9/11. I know Razali did. But I was also there. I went to New York 2 weeks after 9/11. And in the faces of New Yorkers, you saw insecurity. So the greatest power on the face of the earth, the greatest military power, the country that spends more on defense than all other countries combined, the United States, I mean, they say the United States military budget is more than the 10 next countries. But the 10 next countries are almost the rest of the world. Because what we spend in comparison to what they spend is peanuts. United States spends over $600 billion a year on weapons, on military. Then China, then who? Number three is Saudi Arabia. $67 billion in military purchases. And number four is Russia. We're way down. We spend $16 billion on defense every year, in spite of the fact that we have 1 million people under arms. Only feeding them costs that much, but we spend altogether $16 billion a year on defense. The United States, which spends more on military than the rest of the world combined, could not secure its own citizens. The primary responsibility of any state is to secure its citizens. And the U.S. could not do it. You saw it in the faces of New Yorkers. Anybody taking pictures? New York police told me when I was there in 2002 as permanent representative of Iran, my security guards several times were expelled from the U.S. And I said, why? They said people saw them taking pictures of subway stations, saw them taking pictures of a bridge. I said, okay, they want to show their wives that they are living in New York. Said, no. People are now concerned about anybody with a beard and a different look taking pictures of our important buildings and monuments. That's the state of insecurity in which the people, the citizens of greatest military power lived under. So we need to understand that you cannot have a sea of an island of tranquility in the sea of turbulence. That is an impossible argument. So we put all of these together, we see a new world with new concepts, with new realities emerging, with every commodity from communication to security becoming globalized. Even emotions are globalized. That is why aggressors need shock and awe, need quick victories, because lengthy wars create global emotions that cannot be sustained. If a war lasts longer than a certain period, global emotions will come into play, will make a war unsustainable. If we understand all these realities, then we live in a different world environment. Under these circumstances, we in the Muslim world, who are suffering, in every corner of the Muslim world we're suffering, Al-Quds is now becoming a commodity to be sold. You know, the deal of the century, the entire deal of the century, is about purchasing. I mean, it's just like real estate. I don't want to bash anybody, but the mentality that wants to buy Greenland looks at every international development in terms of real estate. So what is the deal of the century? The deal of the century is to build hotels around the most sacred places for Muslims, Christians, and Jews, and believe that by simply building real estate property, you solve the problem. This is what is happening to our world. This is what is happening to the Muslim world, from Palestine to Persian Gulf, where we have foreigners coming to the Persian Gulf to provide us security. This man was holding a baby, and the baby was crying. Very bad-looking man. And he was trying to calm the baby by kissing her, him or her. And some wise man came to him and said, just put him down. He'll quiet, because he's afraid of you. The United States is the cause of insecurity in the Persian Gulf. Now it wants to create security by creating a coalition. And we go along because we have lost track of the global developments. Global developments are that no single state can provide security. You cannot have security at the expense of insecurity of others. The United States cannot come to the Persian Gulf and claim to create security where Iran has 1,500 miles of coastline on the Persian Gulf. It owns the northern part of the Strait of Hormuz and 1,500 miles of coastline in the Sea of Oman. And the United States believes that by bringing a few ships to the Persian Gulf, it can create security not only for itself, but for others. We still have people in this day and age who want to buy security from outside, in the Muslim world. You see, we have countries who believe getting close to Bibi Netanyahu will buy them security. Now, Bibi Netanyahu's Iron Dome cannot even protect Israel from a few organizations. Now, how can he provide you security in the Persian Gulf? I mean, he would love it if we have not transformed our cognitive map about the developments in the international system. Those who use the outdated paradigm of international relations, the Cold War mentality, would love it. That will enable them to perpetuate their domination. We only need to think, can he provide security for himself? Is the United States capable of providing security for its own citizens? How can we buy security from the United States? Of course, Trump would love to milk us. That's what he calls us. Milking cows. Is that something that we like to hear? Is that something we like to hear? I mean, I get disturbed, I get ashamed when Senator Lindsey Graham says, if it were not for our support, Arab countries would speak Farsi in 1 week. This is disgusting. This is disgraceful. But that's the price you pay for getting bogged down in the old cognitive order, in believing that you can purchase security from outside, in believing that anybody from outside can give you security, that you can purchase legitimacy from outside. The Islamic world needs, the developing world, needs to come to that cognitive transformation, that we can only provide our own security. We can only provide our own development. That doesn't mean isolationism. That doesn't mean being anti-Western. That doesn't mean being anti-anything. It means recognizing our own power, recognizing our own role, recognizing that things cannot be purchased from outside. Dignity cannot be purchased. Security cannot be purchased. Development cannot be purchased. Of course, we can work together for development. Of course, we can take advantage of complementarities, of comparative advantages that each one of us has, including the West. But we have to understand that we live in a different world, that we live in a different global environment, that we cannot have sustainable security, sustainable development, sustainable growth, sustainable progress, unless we base on our reliance on our own people. You see, for 40 years, Iran has been under sanctions. 8 years, victims of an imposed war. When Saddam Hussein started his war against Iran, everybody went to his help. And we were only a year old. I mean, we're 7,000 years old, but the new revolutionary government was a year old. They thought they could overrun us in a week. That is why when he invaded Iran, I'm not just giving you interpretations. Look at the date of Security Council Resolution 479. The war started on the 22nd of September. The first Security Council resolution was issued on the 29th of September. And that resolution didn't even call for withdrawal. It simply called for an end of hostilities. Because they thought we would be gone in a week or two. We're still around. During the war, Saudi Arabia paid Saddam Hussein $75 billion. Each time we captured a tank, we saw another new tank in front of us. Britain gave them Chieftain tanks. France gave them Exocet missiles and Mirage fighters. Even those they couldn't give them, they gave them on loan, rented them. Soviet Union gave them MiG fighters. Our Chinese friends gave them missiles. Germany gave them chemical weapons. United States gave them AWACS surveillance information about any troop movement by Iran. Look where they are. Look where he is. He used the money that Saudi Arabia gave him and the weapons he bought with that money against Kuwait. That is the meaning of purchasing security. They paid him to purchase security. We are still around. 40 years of sanctions. It's interesting. They didn't give us weapons to defend ourselves. During the war with Iran, there was an arrangement called Wassenaar Arrangement. The purpose of the Wassenaar Arrangement was to deprive Iran from buying weapons. It was an arms control regime. But basically, that was the gist of it. So what did we do? We built our own missiles. And now they complain, why did you build your missiles? Did you give us anything else to defend ourselves with? You thought that we would purchase our security. We don't. I mean, we like to get good airplanes, good fighter jets. But if we don't get them, we build them ourselves. They complain about our drones. Well, sorry. We do not rely on you for our security. We used an Iranian air defense system. We had S-300. but we used an Iranian air defense system to shoot down the most sophisticated US spy drone in order to show them that we won't rely on anybody for our security. Now, they deprived us of the fuel we needed to fuel the research reactor that the United States built for Iran in the 1950s under Eisenhower's Atom for Peace. They thought we would close down the reactor because they not only didn't give it to us themselves, they even prevented Argentina from giving it to us. So they thought that our spare fuel will be out of supply one day and we will close down the reactor. And we said we will build our own 20% enriched uranium. We produced, and they thought a country like Iran would never be able to do that because they are used to us simply saying yes, sir. We produced our own 20% enriched uranium. Then they started complaining and shouting that Iran wants to build the nuclear weapons because it went to 20% enriched uranium. What? You didn't give it to us, we produced it. We need to use our own people. We need to rely on our own people. We need to cooperate with each other. That is why I believe in common security, common progress, common development in the developing world, in the Islamic world. But that starts with basing our legitimacy, basing our security, basing our development domestically. Genuine internal security. It's not self-reliance. I'm not going back to the old schools of self-reliance. We cannot be self-reliant in a globalized world. But being self-reliant is different from putting your hope on others for security, for economic development, for progress, for whatever. You need to be what we call a resilient economy scheme. You need to be outward looking, but springing from within. You need to be genuinely homegrown, but outward looking. That's what we need. I think with that, we can change our cognitive orientation to the realities. These are the realities in the outside world. We usually have to think ahead, but not think behind. Our cognitive disorder is because we are stuck in the past. The past will not give us a better life. If we want to move forward, we need to think forward. And thinking forward requires us to break from the paradigm that has dominated us for so many years and decades, the paradigm of exclusion, the paradigm of might makes right, the paradigm that we need to look westward to for everything, for development, for culture, for progress, for security. That paradigm does not apply anymore. Not that we need to change it, that paradigm has changed. We just need to change our minds. Thank you.